From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. America struggles with 9% unemployment, with jobs going overseas, but there's one part of the country that's flourishing, Silicon Valley. Technology companies are booming, and smarter machines can now do more and more of the jobs humans once did. This hour on Point, the age of accelerating innovation, machines in the workplace, and what it all means for the 99%. You can join the conversation. What can you do at work that a machine can't? Are you sure? Is it enough to save your job? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now in the studio are, first, Eric Brynjolfsson, professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management, director of the MIT Center for Digital Business. He is co-author of the new book, Race Against the Machine, How the Digital Revolution is Accelerating Innovation, Driving Productivity, and Irreversibly Transforming Employment and the Economy. Eric Brynjolfsson, thanks so much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us in the studio is Andrew P. McAfee, Eric's co-author on the book Race Against the Machine. He's principal research scientist at the Center for Digital Business and the MIT Sloan School of Management, and a fellow at Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society, also co-authored Enterprise 2.0. Andrew McAfee, thank you very much for being here.
Tom, thanks for having us.
All right. We know we've got machines. We've had them for a long time. The Luddites smashed them up and weren't happy about them. And here we are, it's 2011. Andy, what's going on, Andrew, with machines in the workplace that we may not be fully caught up with yet? What's the pace and volume of machines moving in?
Well, what Eric and I noticed and what led us to write the book was that we saw digital machines encroaching on skills that used to belong to human beings alone, things that humans alone were good at. Just in the past few years, we've seen machines start to do things like drive cars in traffic and translate with reasonable quality among human languages, understand human speech, synthesize human speech and response. And we started to perceive this fairly broad and quick encroachment into previously human territory. That has a lot of implications for the economy and for the workforce.
Eric, it still sounds kind of futuristic. Machines driving cars in traffic or trucks, maybe so. Maybe it's Google's cars we're talking about here, but right. I don't see pilotless semi-trailer trucks on the highways yet, at least not that I'm aware of.
No, we're still in the early stages of this transformation, but the effects are being found throughout the economy already. I mean, we all interact with robots almost every week when you think of ATMs and what they're doing, or kiosks at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've found is that the pace of change is accelerating, and the effects are becoming more and more important on employment and on wages.
So where does it stand, Andrew? I mean, in terms of the percentage of work, I don't know, that humans did 100 years ago or 50 years ago or 20 years ago, you know, how much machine action is there now where it used to be human hands, human minds?
Well, we don't exactly know, because as Eric says, this is the early days of what we think is going to be a broad and very deep transformation.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start to enumerate the things that you might hire a human being to do, you're not going to hire them to add up a long column of numbers anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Computers have been good at that for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to hire them increasingly to do routine transactions. And we see self-checkout counters at drugstores. We see kiosks at airports. So a lot of these very routine transactions and interactions, computers are pretty good at. We're outsourcing work to them.
Mm-hmm.
What we've noticed is that as you move up in the ladder of human skill complexity to get into things like pattern recognition and more complex forms of communication, we're starting to see computers get strangely good at this very, very quickly.
And you're not talking just about sales clerks who no longer have a job checking you out. I mean, you guys are looking at lawyers, legal work, computers going through millions of pages of documents to do what legal pros might have done.
Which they can do with great speed and great accuracy. We found a story that we put in the book about a guy who used e-discovery software to do exactly what you say, which is go through huge piles of digital documents, look for patterns in the data there. He did that at a fraction of the cost it would have cost him to employ a room full of lawyers. And then he went back and did it on another pile of documents where he had employed a room full of lawyers to read
them.
Humans. He found out that the e-discovery software told him that the humans were about 60% accurate at their job. And his point was...
And the machines? Were they better?
The machines were better. And he said, I spent a lot of money on people to do a bit better than a coin flip.
Wow. And here we're talking
talking about a new kind of subtlety of intelligence being applied through machines to even work at what we think of as the high end of the sort of labor range. Now, Eric, in the past, I mean, people, we've been at this for a couple of hundred years, machines coming in the workplace, people feared them, but we've always dealt. I mean, what's so different? You know, there's been displacement, there's been problems, pain, and some woe. But over time, you know, we've found other things for humans to do. Why is this different?
It is different, but you make an important point, and we want to make sure we put this in perspective. This isn't the first time that machines have replaced human labor, and mostly that's a good thing. If you go back to 1800, about 90% of Americans worked on farm. By 1900, it was about 41%, and today it's 2%.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have
88. So we did that. We dealt with that.
We dealt with that. We didn't have 88%
employment. A couple hundred years, and we're all rearranged.
What happened was it wasn't what economists call the lump of labor fallacy, that when you replace that work, you just didn't have anything for the people to do.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, entrepreneurs like Henry Ford invented whole new industries like the auto industry,
mm-hmm.
and those people found new work, and ultimately we created a lot more wealth and a lot more productivity than we would have otherwise.
So what's the problem? Here we go again.
So what is the problem? That was something that we struggled with trying to understand how it could be that technology was advancing, and in the past it always been such a good thing, but today we see 14 million people unemployed, median wages stagnating. And when we look more closely at the data, what we found was that what's different this time is that the pace of technology is significantly more rapid than it was in the past.
The pace of what? Technology pushing into the workplace in new roles.
Computer scientists talk about Moore's Law, the doubling of the amount of processing power every 18 months.
But that's for silicon chips. Is that now applying to, I don't know, robots and machines?
Well, robots are silicon chips.
Well, yes,
absolutely.
Watch out. Yeah.
It's affecting all information processing tasks, which is about 60% of the labor force. But it's also affecting the other 40% through robots. Andy mentioned trucking, and a lot of other applications are becoming more and more affected by this. So not only is the pace much more rapid, but the scope, the number of types of jobs. When the automatic thresher came to agriculture,
For harvesting grain,
mm-hmm. about 25% of the labor force was involved in threshing, and most of those people lost their jobs.
My grandfather told stories about that. They loved it. All the guys, the whole community would be out there in the field working, and then the threshing machine came.
Exactly. So there was one quarter of one particular industry that was massively affected over a matter of a few decades.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking about really just about every job in the economy ultimately potentially being affected, and the pace of change is that much more rapid.
Where you guys start is kind of important to us to understand your perspective here. And as I read, Eric, Andrew, you began, you know, sort of working on this with an eye to basically celebrate the acceleration of innovation. I mean, it's always been something humans have celebrated. But somewhere in the middle of this research, you started to get the willies. You started to get a little unnerved by what you saw. Why? What?
Because just like you say, Eric and I are strong digital optimists. We think technology is doing amazing things for our society and for our lives. And we wanted to write a book that celebrated that and that enumerated the kinds of digital innovation that we're seeing these days. And to just stop and think for a moment about all the stuff, for example, that we have for free these days, access to the largest pool of human knowledge in history, the ability to communicate in any media as much as we want with our people all around the world. This is astonishing. So we're really happy about that. What we noticed, though, as we were preparing to write that book, was that things were not getting better with the employment data. And we started to look more carefully at that data. Like Eric says, we saw these trends going back at least a decade. So median incomes in America have been stagnant or falling for a decade.
Closer to three decades, actually.
Yeah.
So we started to put...
We thought that was outsourcing. That's because of cheap labor abroad.
And it's not because of outsourcing. Yeah. That's an absolute phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And just like trade is a really beneficial thing for an economy, that